This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhim in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
About 40,000 Africans in Israel are facing an uncertain future as Israel resumes efforts to deport them.
That's VOA's Robert Berger reporting from Jerusalem. Details coming up also. Human rights experts are calling on the French government to provide services to thousands of migrants living in isolated camps. And five park rangers and their driver were killed today in an attack in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Virunga Wildlife Park. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story: about 40,000 Africans in Israel are facing an uncertain future as Israel resumes efforts to deport them. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
African migrants have been on a roller coaster ride since last week when the Israeli government did an about-face. First, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that Israel had reached a compromise with the UN Refugee Agency. Under the deal, some 16,000 Africans would be sent to Western countries, while more than 20,000 would be allowed to remain in Israel. The migrants were elated, but not for long. Netanyahu abruptly canceled the agreement the next day after his right-wing coalition partners demanded that all the Africans be deported. The government rejects claims the Africans are refugees, describing them as economic migrants and infiltrators. Most of the migrants arrived in Israel from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan during the past decade. Teklit Mikhael, a 29-year-old asylum seeker from Eritrea, says he does not know where he can work legally, he does not have a permanent place to live, and he fears being deported or thrown in jail. Some Israelis blame the migrants for rising crime and poverty in South Tel Aviv and accuse them of threatening the Jewish character of the state. So the government is trying to revive a plan to send them to a third country in Africa after Uganda backed out of a deal to take them in because it could not guarantee their safety. Israeli human rights lawyer Avigdor Feldman says the government's policy is legally and morally unacceptable. He says sending people to African countries where their lives would be in danger is a violation of international law. He adds that Israel has an ethical obligation to offer the Africans asylum because Jews were refugees during the Holocaust. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
In the Central African Republic, at least two civilians have been killed since yesterday when United Nations and CAR forces began a push to gain control of the PK5 neighborhood in the capital Bangui. More than 50 people have been injured, including 11 UN peacekeeper troops, most of them Egyptians. Late last night, armed groups responded to the operation by attacking a UN base near the president's home. Reporter Freeman Sipila with VOA's French to Africa service says many of the armed groups remained in the PK5 area this morning. He says activity in the mostly Muslim neighborhood was paralyzed. The CAR has struggled with violence since the mainly Muslim Seleka rebel alliance overthrew longtime leader François Bozizé in 2013. French and UN troops pushed the Seleka fighters out of the capital, but the government of President Faustin Archange Touadéra has little control outside Bangui. United Nations human rights experts are calling on the French government to provide services to thousands of migrants living in rough camps, in the woods, and isolated areas. Reporter Catherine Field in Paris is covering the story and spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
recall, just over a year ago, the French government cleared out that so-called jungle area where more than 10,000 migrants had been gathering in the hope of getting over to the United Kingdom. Since then, the government has really made its policy, if you like, to stop any new camp growing up there. And so they've been going through and clearing out any migrants that have set up any little camp. Now, what the UN human rights monitors have discovered is that by stopping these people setting up hasn't really solved the problem. All it's done is move people into wooded areas, move them along to, if you like, set up camp in areas where there's no fresh water, there's no sanitation. And that's really the big criticism, is that there's been no long-term government solution to the migrants coming to that area of France, and there's no valid alternative. And that you just by providing temporary housing for 200 or 300 migrants hasn't been the solution. The migrants are still coming there. They are still needing to be fed. They're still needing to be clothed. And by the government just turning their backs on these people isn't a solution.
Now, what is the government's position on this?
The government's position is just as firm. They say, come to us, apply for asylum, get your paperwork there, and then we will look after you. But we will not look after you while you are using France as a springboard to try and get to another country. France has said that it's working on a new immigration law that will streamline that asylum process. It will mean that it will have less time to be sitting around waiting for the asylum and the appeals to go through. They say that is the only way that they are going to help these people.
What is the UN asking for?
They're asking for the French government to set up more temporary accommodation facilities for these people. They're saying, look, you have to help these people. Sending police into forested areas to chase them through and chase them away is not a solution. You've got to have more temporary accommodation. The French, for their side, say, well, we do have some. We're trying to do what we can. But really, there will always be the French government says, is there will always be people who do not want to be part of the official process of applying for either refugee or asylum status in France.
I also understand that there seems to be a bit of a crisis brewing regarding migrants in Paris. Can you give us any details?
Yes, the mayor of Paris has called on, again, the French government to step up to the plate and provide more temporary accommodation for migrants. At the moment, the NGOs and the Paris mayor says that there's around 2,000 migrants sleeping in tents in the northwestern and north area of Paris along the Canal Saint-Martin. They say that there's about 800 Afghans and about 1,500, 1,600 Eritreans and Sudanese who are living in camps, temporary camps along that area. Now, the mayor of Paris says it's up to the government to provide more for these migrants. They already provide for some 750 migrants, but you know, the need is clearly more. Now, she says the government isn't doing enough and that it's just not right that it's being left to NGOs and, in a lot of cases, actually your local residents to help these people.
That was journalist Catherine Field in Paris speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. 5 park rangers and their driver were killed today in an attack in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Virunga Wildlife Park. Park officials say the team was ambushed near the border with Uganda. The Virunga Park is listed as Africa's first wildlife sanctuary, established in 1925. It is home to several endangered species, including mountain gorillas, as well as lowland gorillas. It sits in the DRC's North Kivu province, where armed groups are battling for control of land and resources. They frequently poach in the park or extract timber and other resources. More than 120 rangers and park workers have been killed by poachers or militia groups over the past 20 years. Taiwan says it regrets that the One China policy insisted on by Beijing prevents it from providing much-needed development aid to most countries in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from Taipei.
Taiwan was in a relatively good diplomatic position in Africa several years ago. Taiwan's Deputy Secretary General for International Cooperation and Development, Pei Po Li, says this made it possible for those countries that had diplomatic relations with Taiwan to benefit from his agency's aid projects.
Previously, we have a nearby 9 countries with Taiwan, for instance, Senegal, Gambia, the Chad, Niger, Liberia, Central Africa, also the Sao Tome Principe. Yeah. 6 years ago, they still have the relationship with Taiwan, but that shift to the China.
Li says Taiwan had invested a lot in the African region, but all that is now in the past. He says Taiwan currently maintains diplomatic relations with only 2 countries, Burkina Faso and Swaziland. He says Taiwan has been running productive agricultural and livestock, as well as vocational and medical programs in Swaziland since 1975. As for Burkina Faso, he says a successful irrigation project on the Ku River, which was started in 1967, ended in 1973. That was when Burkina Faso broke off relations with Taiwan in favor of China. But Li tells VOA Burkina Faso restored ties with Taiwan in 1994. He suggests the lure of billions of dollars in Chinese aid was not strong enough to keep this impoverished country within Beijing's diplomatic orbit.
Is it coming from the Burkina Faso people? To think about the 1967 in Gu River, this 1967, they have quite a good memory of that. So the people to urge the government to restore the relation with Taiwan. So that pressure comes from people.
Since resuming development work in Burkina Faso, the Taiwanese development official says the country's irrigation system has been expanded. He says a program is ongoing to train local nurses and medical doctors, and an infant and maternal health program is having great success in reducing both maternal and infant deaths. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Taipei.
Past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Sub-Saharan Africa has the youngest population in the world, and it is growing. By 2030, the United Nations estimates the region will be home to a quarter of the world's 15 to 24-year-olds. How will African countries cope with this new generation striving to study and work? Universities on the continent are already overwhelmed. For VOA, Sophia Christensen has the first of 3 reports from Senegal's largest public university.
Class is in session, but as the professor lectures on finance law, student Nsa Diop is hanging around outside, looking annoyed. If you really want a seat, he says, you need to get here at noon or at 11 a.m. for a class that starts at 3 p.m. But his previous class only just finished at 2. These are everyday scenes at Dakar's Cheikh Anta Diop University. Insa is one of the more than 3,000 second-year law students, but the school's main lecture hall can only sit 2,000. He says he will make photocopies of the handout. As for the teachers' explanations, well, he says, I miss them. Around 60% of students at Cheikh Anta Diop failed their exams last year. Administrators and staff blame overcrowding. The university has an official capacity of about 25,000 students. Today, there are more than 100,000 enrolled. Like universities across Africa, Cheikh Anta Diop is bursting at the seams. The dorms are already overflowing. The nights are hot, students say, and the taps regularly run dry. Postgraduate student Martine Mendy sleeps with 11 other girls in a small room with three bunk beds. We are used to it, she says. I have lived like this all year. In 2013, the Senegalese government embarked on a massive reform of higher education, investing about $750 million over 5 years. The head of Cheikh Diop, Chancellor Ibrahim Atioub, told VOA the investment in infrastructure has been unprecedented. He says we have spent twice as much in 5 years than we did in the past 60 years. The urgency is clear. Nearly half of Senegal's current population is under 14, a looming demographic bulge, and the number of students completing secondary school is on the rise. Senegal is expanding existing campuses and building two new universities outside Dakar. A virtual university was also created in 2014, and the government offers grants for some students to attend private institutes, which now account for about a third of university-level enrollments. Youssouf Ouattara is UNESCO's Higher Education Project Coordinator. He says Senegal has taken the bull by the horns and is setting an example for the region. But he fears the reforms have come too late. He says we would have wanted to see the same effort start 18 years ago. Students at Cheikh Diop are frustrated with the slow pace. Campus protests over living and learning conditions are still a regular occurrence, put down at times with tear gas and rubber bullets. Jean-Pierre Mendy is in his fourth year of law studies. He says the reforms were meant to reduce lags in the administration, speed up exam marking, and improve living conditions. We were promised all this, he says, but we still haven't seen anything. A campus protest in 2014 turned deadly. Police shot mathematics student Basirou Faye in the head. The officer was later convicted of murder and sentenced to 20 years of hard labor. Campus tensions have eased since then, but experts urge Senegal to push ahead with reforms and implement them quickly. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
The African Continental Free Trade Area aims to deepen regional economic integration and has been in the works since January 2012. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he has not yet signed the accord because he needs to do more consultations. He says key stakeholders in Nigeria indicated they had not been consulted and are concerned about some provisions of the treaty to form a $2.5 trillion free trade zone. Oki Onochukwu is professor of economics and the director of the business school at the University of Port Harcourt. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the importance of the Continental Free Trade Area.
I've read through that key proposal, and the idea is really to expand the continent in terms of the trade zone, to create a common continental, you know, trade zone, which will actually increase the volume of trade within African countries. So the basic thing is to expand the coast in terms of the area of trade among the African countries.
You think the free trade area can contribute to the growth of the gross domestic product, GDP, of African states?
Yeah, basically, you know that trade is quite beneficial to country because no country can produce all that it needs, so which means that no country is autarkic in nature. So every country depends on each other. So what you can produce, you can get it from the other country. And again, your domestic market might not be enough to buy all that you have produced. So you need the external people to also buy from you. So expanding the trade area within the African country will enable the African countries to increase the economic growth and expand their gross domestic product.
Nigeria and nine other African Union member states did not sign the agreement. Do you think their action will affect the implementation of the agreement?
I don't really think that will affect it that much, although Nigeria is a very wide market. And I also don't know why Nigeria has not signed, although the reason they give is that they are still consulting. That won't be a good reason for not signing that. It won't affect it because if the other nations come together, you know, to trade among, you know, one another, they can go ahead. But what I'm saying is that Nigeria will be missing a lot from getting out of this kind of agreement. It is to be quite beneficial to us to get into the agreement because you find out that within the domestic economy, there are some micro businesses that are coming up that are looking for outlet for, you know, their product. If you take Aba, for instance, they've conquered, you know, the textile industry in Nigeria. So they need that expansion so that they can export their goods outside, you know, to increase their own capital base and also, you know, to increase in the gross domestic product.
What should the African Union do to convince Nigeria and other African countries to sign the agreement?
It is through persuasion, pleading with them and making them realize the importance of this agreement, because no country can force any other country to go into an agreement that they don't like or they don't want to be part of. I will still say that AU should continue to plead with Nigeria and the other countries to make them realize the need and importance of having this agreement signed and actually implementing it.
What impediments to trade currently exist, and how will the free trade area change them?
Well, you also know that there are so many barriers in international trade. We talk about, you know, the custom area where you talk about custom duties and tariff. Once this agreement is signed, I'm sure too, they've also looked at that area where you make the custom duties and all that highly flexible to allow for free trade. Then distance is also another barrier. You also need to improve, you know, the transport system among, you know, these nations to ensure that, you know, the movement of goods and the human movement move freely within the African nation. So transportation and road network is another very serious impediment, you know, to trade across border. So which means that I'm also sure that this agreement should look at some of these impediments and also put out ways of actually smoothing them so that somebody who is moving goods from Nigeria to Cote d'Ivoire will not have too much restrictions in terms of stop here and border checks in the borders.
Are there any problems that the deal could create in the future?
To some extent, I'm sure too that is one of the fear that some of these nations are nursing. When you say that you have, you know, free movement of goods and human beings, it will also lead to a situation where refugees might increase in a particular country. Take, for instance, Nigeria. Some people might want to come to Nigeria when they have difficulties in their country. So that will increase the number of persons, illegal immigrants, into a particular country. I'm sure that that is some of the things that our country is actually looking at. If you take, for instance, the Brexit scene, that is, you know, the Britain wanting to exit from the EU. One basic reason is that there are so many people moving into Britain, and then reducing or putting pressure on the facilities, you know, that are provided. That is one key reason that they want to pull out. So this could also happen if we have this kind of free movement of people into countries. There could be so much weight on a particular country's facilities that could lead to a situation where the facilities that are available will not be enough, you know, to provide for both those that are coming in and those that are settled domestically.
That was Oki Onuchukwu, Professor of Economics and Director of the Business School at Nigeria's University of Port Harcourt. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye from Port Harcourt. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
I'm Lee Normadou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss some basic steps you can take to help you stay in good health when traveling. Our guest is Dr. Ken Red Cross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.